The World Series is set. Los Angeles Dodgers versus New York Yankees. Who you got? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Monday, October 21st. Your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rau. Follow him on Twitter at Christian S. Rau, R-A-U-H. And Christian, over the weekend, we have a World Series matchup. We saw the New York Yankees take down the Cleveland Guardians 5-2 on Saturday to punch their ticket, followed the very next day, last night, by the Los Angeles Dodgers taking down the Mets 10-5 to punch their ticket. Before we get into these two games and what happened, was it always kind of inevitable that we were going to see Shohei Ohtani versus Aaron Judge in the World Series?
Yeah, I think that was the case. I think a lot of people were expecting to see Yankees Dodgers, but you know what? I'm glad we got the postseason we got, at least heading into this, because this is one of the best playoffs that I remember in recent memory. But yeah, this seems inevitable. This seems like what we expected. Yankees, Dodgers, Judge versus Shohei. But you know what? As much as a lot of people are going to be upset about this one, probably 50-50, to be honest, because there's a lot of Dodgers, a lot of Yankees fans, but the 28 other team fans are not excited about this one. I think it's going to be great for baseball overall, and we're probably going to see some very high ratings for the sport in the World Series, something that they haven't had in the last couple seasons because of the teams that you had in last year with the Rangers and the Diamondbacks. So overall, this is probably good for the game. I'm really excited. I'm excited to see Shohei Ohtani on a big stage, Aaron Judge on a big stage. This is going to be great for baseball, great for the sport.
This is a matchup between the largest payroll in baseball, the Los Angeles Dodgers, $326.9 million, and the number three, the New York Yankees, at $320.6 million. The team in the middle, New York Mets, eliminated. As soon as the Yankees traded for Juan Soto, this felt like this could happen, and this is kind of what you were building to. There were moments when I don't think we knew for a fact if it was going to happen. We talked on this show down the stretch, would the Dodgers even hold off the Padres to win the division, right? We talked about the Yankees and the Orioles being tied for a good long while before the Yankees finally pulled it away after the Orioles just had a terrible trade deadline. Before we get into what happened in these games, I think the last thing I want to ask is, which of the playoff teams that's obviously not in the World Series is the biggest surprise that they didn't make the World Series? For me, I think it's the Philadelphia Phillies. I know their offense wasn't the same in the second half that it was in the first, but they just looked like one of the more dominant teams in baseball all season. And then to go out the way they did to the New York Mets was, I think, probably the biggest shock of October for me.
Yeah, I mean, Phillies is a good one, but how can you not have at least on your radar the Houston Astros? I mean, how many times did we see Houston in the World Series? Did we see them at least in the ALCS? And they're swept in the wild card round. So I'm going to go ahead and say Houston Astros. But overall, I think you're right. Based on the performance of the other teams, the Phillies kind of crapped the bed towards the end. And what we saw from them at the first half of the season, I thought that team was unbeatable. But obviously that wasn't the case as we got down to October and so on. So yeah, the Phillies is a good one. But how can you not say the Astros, at least for the American League?
Simply because they've done it so many times, right? All right, so let's get into these actual games from over the weekend. Let's start with the Dodgers and the Mets, kind of setting the matchup. I know they were the Sunday game versus the Saturday game. Just work with us here, people. So Dodgers up 10-5 to take the victory over the Mets. And this is something, they scored 6 runs in the first 3 innings, right? This was a bullpen game for LA. They threw Michael Kopech out there to start the game. And they went from there, but a lot of their damage came off of Sean Manaea. He goes 2+ innings. He doesn't get out. He doesn't record it out in the third inning. 6 hits, 5 runs, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts. And you saw New York have to almost kind of scramble in this one. They brought in Edwin Diaz in the, I think it was for the fourth inning. He pitched the fourth and the fifth, one strikeout, one walk. But Manaea just didn't have it early. And I think that kind of set the tone against an LA offense that absolutely did have it early. They picked up 11 hits, scored 10 runs, and drew more walks than they struck out because they've been one of the most disciplined teams at the plate in all of baseball this year. Was it more surprising to see LA jump out to that big league early, or for New York to actually kind of threaten a little bit and make it back into a game by narrowing the deficit? I believe they had it 7-5 going into the eighth inning before the Dodgers put up a three spot.
I don't even know if you can say either of those are the more surprising, Lindsay, because what we've expected from the Dodgers all season long is them to do exactly what they did, jump ahead and win games big. And then on the flip side, we have talked about so many times on the show of how impressive this Mets rotation has been, regardless of the injuries, regardless of how, you know, just the way that they've lined up. No one expected this Mets rotation to be as good as they were all season long. They finally got caught up to in this series. And we saw it so many times happening with Manaea. We saw it with Quintana. It just was kind of expected that it was eventually going to happen. And we saw it, especially in this game. Not only did Manaea have a bad outing, Senga didn't have any posting whatsoever. I wonder if it was even a good idea to put him on the roster, because I feel like every single one of his outings weren't very great. I don't know if you could consider him, you know, the deciding factor of why they're eliminated. I think that still points to the offense. But I think that the Mets pitching staff was just finally caught up to, and I think we're going to see some changes, possibly some big changes from the Mets offseason regarding that rotation, because look, Lindsay, they made it just a couple games shy of the World Series. No one expected them to make it this far this year, and now they have a team that could do so. I think there's a huge offseason ahead for the Mets, and I think one of the biggest ones they're going to point at, one of the biggest portions they're going to point at, is trying to fix this rotation.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's a lot of questions about what it looks like going forward. You got free agents, you've got injured guys. What happens going forward? We'll see there. But kind of getting back to this game, Tommy Edman ends up being the MVP of the NLCS. He drove in the first four runs of the game. He finishes, I believe it was, where was it here? It was, he finishes 2-for-5. Again, two runs scored, four RBI, hits a home run in the third, turns around, has a double in the third. They bat around in that third inning. And I don't quite think I expected a team that had Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, although he was hampered, you know, Max Muncy, Kike Hernandez, to one, bat Tommy Edman cleanup and then have him be MVP of the NLCS. But that's what happened. Is that, I know we've talked a lot about how a lot of teams in this postseason didn't have the bottom half of the lineup really contributing. And we saw last night was that rare night where the bottom of the Mets lineup combined for six hits and three runs and two RBI and all that. Is this just something that the Dodgers do better than everybody else, is getting these players like this, finding roles for them to be successful? And then when you find some sort of advantage, like in this case, Edmund's matchups being really good, putting him in a position to do more damage by moving him up to cleanup, is this something special for the Dodgers, or is this just it worked out this time, but it's not a guarantee?
And the way that this roster is constructed, I think they could put anybody in any position. They could find a way to have success when they're all firing on all cylinders like they have in this series. This is the first time in the career of Tommy Edman he batted cleanup, and he did a pretty dang good job. So going 2-for-5, four RBIs, not a bad little go for somebody who didn't play the first half of the season. They took an absolute risk on Tommy Edman. He came into Los Angeles not even having a single at-bat on the season. He was dealing with that wrist injury. He was out for the entire first half of the season. He was just coming back on a rehab assignment when he was traded over to the Dodgers, and they took a risk on him. But they knew the past, what they had from Tommy Edman and what he did with the St. Louis Cardinals, and he has stepped up absolutely just what you could imagine for Tommy Edman doing. I think you could even make that even higher of what he's actually accomplished. I have a tweet, and you put it. I put it out and I sent it to you in the group chat. I saved it. I'm gonna put it out if it happens in the World Series. But I put something out in August talking about the Cardinals implosion. I said, you know what that means, right, Lindsay? That means Tommy Edman's going to win the World Series MVP. Well, he did it in National League Championship Series. Let's see if he can actually do it in the World Series as well.
Yeah, for the series, Tommy Edman bats 407. He has a hit in all six games, four of those hits for extra bases. He had 11 RBI, which matches Corey Seager for the team's for the club record in any round of the postseason since that stat became official in 1920. Just not something you'd expect from a 29-year-old switch hitter, 5'10", who's never even hit 60 RBI in his six seasons in the majors to turn around and have a series like that. But absolutely does it there. Okay, we're going to get to the Yankees. Real quick, I want to tell you guys about a new sponsor of the show, Encase Cards, N-C-A-S-E, Encase Cards, EncaseCards.com. Really cool company, what they're doing here, revolutionizing the custom card industry. They got this great team that they make a custom card featuring your own stock photo. So for instance, my kids, both my kids participate in youth sports. My daughter plays soccer. My son plays t-ball. They have gone in there with their state-of-the-art digital processes, their artists, and they have custom made collectible slabbed trading cards for my kids. Something where if you have these cherished moments that you want to memorialize, that's a thing you can do. Fantastic quality. They look very, very tons of customization and designs available for you, whether it's color schemes, whether it's backgrounds, all of that kind of stuff. So encasecards.com, N-C-A-S-E-cards.com. Go check them out. Tell them the boys at First Pitch sent you. Okay, so this Dodgers game, again, great matchup. We love what they did. Shout out to the Mets for getting this far. They have a lot of questions as far as what they do from here. We're going to go, I think this week is probably, I think tomorrow's show is probably going to be catching up on news that we've missed during this series. And then we'll talk about the Mets and the Guardians and what they do from here, what their off seasons look like. How can they get back to this point next season? But let's move over to the American League. The New York Yankees take down the Cleveland Guardians on Saturday, 5-2 in 10 innings. A very fun matchup. Yankees are down 2-0 in the sixth. Giancarlo Stanton hits his fifth home run of the postseason to tie it up. That is the same score going into the 10th inning when Juan Soto has his postseason moment and hits a three-run home run. I believe it was off of Hunter Gaddis to take a 5-2 lead. That is the final margin. The New York Yankees punched their ticket to the World Series. What was, I guess, more surprising, that Giancarlo Stanton won MVP of the ALCS or that Juan Soto got the home run in the 10th inning?
I think if you're going to ask that question, the most surprising has to be Stanton, right? Because what he has done this playoff so far has been unreal, and we haven't seen that from him in quite some time. These trades finally worked out, Lindsay. It took a little bit longer for Stanton's trade to make sense, but and obviously Soto being traded in this offseason. I was listening to the call on ESPN Radio. I was driving home from dinner, actually, when the Juan Soto hit came up, and Tim Kirchen was on the call, and he said right before the at-bat, well, actually during the at-bat, because Soto was having this internal conversation with himself, this internal fight between Gaddis and Soto, and Gaddis wanted nothing of it. But you could just see on the when he was sitting at the plate that, you know, he was having this internal fight. I went back and watched this at-bat, by the way, a million times already. If you're going to, you know, show anybody that needs to be a baseball fan of a good at-bat, the full at-bat of Juan Soto's home run to win this game is the one to show, in my opinion. But Kirchen said, this is the reason why they traded for Juan Soto. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Lindsay. How could you not say that's the case? He said that before he hit the home run. It's like he manifested it. So shout out to Tim on that one. But this series, I think, was the best series in the postseason, in my opinion. The first two games were meh, But the last three, game three, four, and five, I don't think you can think of better playoff baseball than those three games. All three of those were absolute barn burners.
Fun fact, Giancarlo Stanton hit home runs in all three of those games. He had four in the ALCS. He only had four hits in the series, but they were all homers. Five runs, seven RBI. And it's just, to me, I think that was a little bit more unlikely as well. We've seen the struggle Stanton has had as far as health, you know, staying healthy. His speed is nowhere near what it was back when he was a Marlin and playing, you know, he's had so many leg injuries and things like that. And his own quote, I didn't plan for it to take this long, but we're here now. And that's exactly kind of, I think, the right vibe to have here. He joins a very prestigious list of other Yankees to be MVP of the ALCS. Bernie Williams, David Wells, David Justice, Andy Pettit, Mariano Rivera. He has, in his postseason, this is a fun stat here. In his postseason career, he has eight hits against Cleveland. All eight of them are home runs. It is the longest single streak of any MLB player versus a team in MLB history. The next longest is Jim Thome. He has five playoff homers against the Red Sox. But Giancarlo Stanton literally only has eight hits against Cleveland in his career, or in his postseason career. Every single one of them is a home run. Of the 38 players that have five or more home runs against a single playoff opponent, Stanton is the only one where every single one of those hits is a home run. It's just, it's, I would argue almost it's the extreme of three true outcomes, right? I mean, he's striking out, he's walking, he's hitting a home run. And we said that he feels like he grounds out a lot, but Giancarlo Stanton was absolutely huge for this. And then just, you kind of look at how this game rolled out. Carlos Rodon is an out short of five innings. He's good enough to win, right? Five hits, two runs, only one walk to six strikeouts. The Yankees pen actually doesn't do a great job after that, as far as they walk four guys, they only get five strikeouts. Four of them are from Nate Cousins. All four of his outs are via strikeout. Leiter has a pitch timer violation. They give up a couple stolen bases. I feel like they gave up a stolen base in there, but just something where the Yankees made it happen. Like Luke Weaver continues to be one of the most dominant closers in the postseason because none of the other ones have been great. Emmanuel Clase finally has a clean inning. He pitches the ninth, one hit, one strikeout, but no runs allowed for the first time. His postseason ERA comes down to 9 in this postseason when the dude had an ERA, I believe, under 1 in the regular season. So just absolutely a lot of things in this game I felt like were a little bit surprising. Was it a mistake for Cleveland to not be aggressive with their pinch hitters like they've been all season? I think the only pinch hit they had, Kyle Manzardo pinch hits for David Fry in the 7th, strikes out. Next time he comes up, he gets a hit. He goes, well, he ends up going 1-for-2. But outside of that, they didn't make any changes at all. Surprising? Or is that one of those, the game was close, there's no need to try to manufacture anymore?
Yeah, the way that the series wound up going into game five, I feel like you couldn't really do too much changes because, you know, Jose Ramirez didn't have a great series, but you always thought he was due, right? Mm-hmm. You always thought that he was going to do something. Lane Thomas didn't have a great series, but he had some great playoff, you know, moving forward, especially against the Tigers. And then other guys like, you know, Big Christmas, he had some great moments, but overall was terrible. Like his home run was great, but he batted, you know, 0.95 in the entire postseason. So you think that you could have made moves. You probably could have to improve off your bench. But overall, those were big players with big moments at certain times. And you didn't want to take that potential away in the postseason. So I'm going to still tip my hat to Stephen Vogt in this one. I think, you know, getting only a couple games shy of the World Series in your first year as a manager is pretty impressive, especially on a Guardians team where I don't think many even had them making the postseason, Lindsay, once the season began. I know that the AL Central has been one of those crapshoots of a division that we've seen over the past couple of years. I mean, just a few years ago, the White Sox were winning this division, right? Now look at them. But I didn't expect Cleveland to be at the top of this division, and they were only a few games shy of making it to the Fall Classic. So I don't know if I think it's surprising or think they should have done a lot of pinch hitting, because the players you had in there were the players that were going to make the big plays. At least you thought so. It just didn't happen. The Yankees, I'm even going to push back a little bit on what you said earlier. I think the Yankees bullpen was pretty solid, regardless of the walks, especially Jake Cousins. And those four strikeouts were amazing. That high cutter, high fastball that he throws is insane. It is really impressive. And to me, if that type of bullpen presence is in the Yankees going into the World Series, the way that their rotation has looked with a guy like Rendon, who seems like he's finally figured it out over his past couple outings, that to me, that's scary. And I think the Dodgers need to watch out heading into Friday.
Yeah. And again, I think Friday's episode, we're going to do a three-man show with our buddy Troy, and we're going to kind of break down the series from every possible angle, make our predictions and things like that. And then we'll, same thing with the Mets, we'll talk about the Guardians tomorrow and kind of where we go from here. I do want to, real quick, the great Sarah Langs had a really interesting postseason stat after last night's game, kind of explaining in the postseason so far, teams that have scored first are 23-15. Teams that have out-homered their opponents are 21-7. And that's actually down from last year. They were 25-4. And 44.7% of runs have scored via home run. Knowing that, knowing those stats, that scoring first and hitting home runs is very important in the postseason, off the top of your head, which offense do you feel like should be favored in the World Series?
You got to lean towards the Dodgers if you're looking at it with those stats. And I can't really say it off the top of my head because I do have some numbers up in front of me. The Dodgers have 20 home runs this postseason already. And as much as you want to say, you know, excitement about the Yankees and how Stanton's done, overall, the Yankees only have 13. Seven less home runs the Yankees have over the Dodgers heading into this World Series. The Dodgers do have two more games than the Yankees. The Dodgers have played 11 compared to the Yankees 9, but, you know, seven extra home runs across two games, that's a lot. So I'd have to point towards the Dodgers, saying that they have the advantage a little bit. But overall, when you're looking at the teams, it's not much different with the exception of the home run. Both of them have about a team OPS around the 760s. So you know, not too bad there. But if you're talking strictly on the long ball, and what was it again for the record? What was it for most home runs?
It was the team with the most home runs is 21-7.
That's a wild stat right there. That's a wild stat that continues on. We're talking about maybe a series ending in five games, Lindsay.
Yeah, and this is something where I think the fact that you have the home run leader in each league on these teams, right? You have Judge for the Yankees. You have Shohei Ohtani for the Dodgers. It's the sixth World Series where each league's home run leader is facing off. The last time was 1956, Mickey Mantle versus Duke Snider. Some other great names in here, Babe Ruth twice, Lou Gehrig, Joe DiMaggio, Mel Ott, a lot of prominent players here. And also, those guys are expected to be MVPs. And so this will be, since 1969, this will be from Sarah Langs. This will be the sixth time that the two MVPs will face off in the World Series, and the first time since Buster Posey and Miguel Cabrera did it in 2012. But it feels like the way that they're hitting in the postseason, that the Dodgers have to be the favorite. His last 22 at-bats with runners in scoring position, he's batting .818. Not a slugging percentage of .818. Not an OPS of .818. He's batting .818. He has 18 hits and 22 at-bats. Now, granted, obviously, when you lead off, there's nobody on base. But it's just, that's wild. He reached base 16 times in the NLCS, a Dodgers franchise record for a single postseason series. It feels like he is as close to peak form as he can be, while Aaron Judge has significantly struggled this postseason. He has the one home run. I think he hit that one out to, was it center or something like that? But outside of that, it feels like, as of just the offenses, the Dodgers have the advantage. Again, we'll break this whole thing down later in this week. But are you excited to have these two giant markets and these two high payroll teams in the World Series? Or is this one of those, like, it almost feels because they spent so much money and they accumulated all this talent that it almost felt, I guess, inevitable? There's some people online who are not happy about this World Series matchup.
Yeah, you could think that this is the script that they've always wanted, right? This is the way for Manfred to finally not get booed. Like, this is what he's hoping for. I think overall, personally, I'm not that excited about the series because I like the underdogs, personally. I don't want to see the two top teams in markets that spend the most money make the postseason. But overall, I think this is the best matchup that we could get for baseball, period, especially after low ratings in last year's World Series, especially after all the money problems that have happened with the regional sports networks over this season. I think this is probably the best case scenario for the sport, and that's good enough for me because I am a long-term advocate of making this sport, you know, the best it can possibly be. This is the greatest sport on earth. So I'm for it. I'm all for it. I'm not personally excited about it, at least in that aspect as a fan, but I will be tuning in for every single second. And I hope it goes seven games because this should be a great series, Lindsay.
I hope that this also provides a little bit of that. I'm not going to say incentive, but a little bit of discussion here about spending, being willing to spend money. The top six teams in total payroll all made the postseason. Outside of that, San Diego was 15, Kansas City was 20, Milwaukee was 21, Baltimore was 22, Cleveland was 23, and Detroit was 26. Only one of them made the championship series, and they were eliminated. Everybody else, again, this is the number two, and these are two of the top payroll teams in the World Series here, in the Yankees and Dodgers. And it feels a little bit odd that you have two homeless franchises right now with Oakland in purgatory and their move to Vegas, the Tampa Bay Rays having a destroyed stadium. Feels weird to have those lower revenue teams homeless right now while your two giant revenue teams play for the World Series. But it's important to understand that a lot of this is self-imposed. The owner of the Cleveland Guardians personally is richer than the Steinbrenners. There's no reason their payroll has to be, 23rd in the league at $106 million. That's self-imposed. And so I think it's kind of been clear here that spending money is a prerequisite to being successful. And some of these playoff pushes from teams like Detroit, like Cleveland, these are more the exception than the rule. And I think ultimately it's a good thing for the sport as a whole to see the biggest stars like a Shohei Ohtani, like an Aaron Judge, on the biggest stage of the World Series, even though it's not necessarily the best for individual fans and for teams to have talent accumulate in these big cities and these big market teams. I think it's the best thing for MLB as a whole, and I think the ratings this postseason have borne that out when they talk about more people in Japan watch the NLCS than in California, or in the United States. Like, it's growing the game. And as frustrating as it is to see Ohtani signing with the Dodgers, which we all, I think, expected to happen last offseason, and then them making the World Series, it's a good thing for the game. So we're going to grin, we're going to bear it, and then we're going to figure out ways to beat those teams this offseason.
I think we're going to see some record numbers of turnout about people watching the World Series. At least it's going to be a lot better than what we've seen in recent memory. I don't know if it's going to draw, you know, 50 million of average viewers that we saw back in the telecast of the 80s when baseball was life, because that's not the case of how it is in the world this day and age. But I hope it definitely increases the viewership. I think this is a great thing for the game, and I hope, and I mean this every way, shape, and form, Lindsay, I hope they find a way to point it towards the youth and push towards a way. I know the NFL does it with like Nickelodeon and stuff and having broadcasts. I don't think they're going to do that with the World Series, but they need to find a way to market Shohei Ohtani, market Aaron Judge towards the younger crowd, because MLB has a problem with the average age of fans. And it is not a good number when you're looking at the future of this sport. So I hope they find a way to do that, because you're in a prime situation to do so with the two biggest markets in baseball. Do not blow this, Manfred. Do not blow this.
Do not blow this. We'll be back tomorrow breaking down, again, the Guardians and the Mets, as well as other news from around MLB. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.